Propadlina Araba spojuje Mrtvé moře s Rudým. Viděli jsme jich hluboko pod sebou. Východně od ní stoupá po...
A 1936 recording of Czech professor Alois Musil, one of the leading Oriental scholars and Arabists of his generation, who is the subject of this edition of Czechs in History. Born into the family of a poor farmer near the Moravian town of Vyškov in 1868, Musil initially studied to be a Catholic priest, and was ordained in 1895. After graduating from his seminary, he made his first trip to the Middle East to take up Bible studies at a religious institute in Jerusalem. Once he is in that part of the world, Musil's interest in monotheism prompted him to make a number of trips to the areas of the Middle East where the Jewish, Christian and Islamic faiths had originated. Over the next few decades, he visited many parts of the Arabian Peninsula, where he befriended the Bedouin Arabs and compiled much valuable information on their traditions and way of life. He also quickly learned many of the languages of the region, which helped him publish many seminal works on Islamic culture. Professor Luboš Kropáček from the Institute of Middle Eastern and African Studies at Charles University is one of the Czech Republic's leading Arabists today. He says Alois Musil's work had a profound impact on the development of Arab studies in this part of the world.
The Arabic studies at the Charles University started in the second half of the 19th century, but Alois Musil was the first world-known figure in this field. And really, we still look at him with great respect.
One of Musil's most important achievements was his discovery of the 8th century Kisar Amra hunting lodge in Jordan, whose figural paintings corrected one of the biggest misconceptions Western Arab scholars had held about the nature of Islam. Professor Kropáček again.
There he discovered a number of frescoes representing human figures. It was still believed in those times that Islam is absolutely opposed to pictures of human or even animal figures, that only geometric or vegetal motifs are allowed. So when Musil came back to Vienna and wrote and spoke about what he discovered, the leading Orientalists of that time said that this is not possible.
In fact, Musil went back to Kisar Amra a second time with witnesses and proved his claims. It was a development which changed the Western world's understanding of Islam. We now know that the religion only forbids human portraits in sacred locations like mosques, but that they are permitted in secular places like the Jordanian Hunting Lodge, which incidentally is now on the UNESCO World Heritage List. Over the years, Alois Musil immersed himself in Arab culture, and even began wearing traditional Islamic dress. Nevertheless, despite his love of Arabic society, he remained a devout Catholic all his life, and sought to foster understanding between Christianity and Islam. Professor Kropáček said that this was an attitude which made Musil something of a visionary who was ahead of his time.
Now, in the light of a modern experience and of our modern endeavor, we really have to feel sympathy for Musil's attempt to widen the scope of the understanding of Islam and to point to common features and also to work for better Christian-Muslim relations. He was a Catholic priest. He was reading Mass every morning down to the days of his death. He was a very, very sincere Christian, at the same time working for appreciation of good, positive qualities of the Arabs whom he came to know during his travels.
During the First World War, Musil was sent by the Austrian government to the Middle East to counteract the efforts of the great English Arabist T.E. Lawrence, or Lawrence of Arabia as he is known to many, to instigate an Arab uprising against the Ottoman Turks, who were the Habsburgs' allies during the conflict. Although much has been made of this rivalry, Professor Luboš Kropáček says that both Arabists were ultimately unhappy with the settlement that was made by Britain in the Middle East after the war, and his repercussions are still being felt to this day. He said that the two men actually had quite a lot in common.
Although they were adversaries during the First World War, they shared the same feelings vis-à-vis the Arabs and the necessity of building good relations on good in human terms, without any superstition, without any false prejudices, which sometimes still exist, it's necessary to say. So they try to do away with such prejudices. I think the two, Musil and Lawrence, never met face to face. If they had met, I am sure they would understand each other quite well.
Although Alois Musil always remained loyal to the Habsburgs and was even the personal confessor of the Empress Zita, he opted to become a Czechoslovak citizen when the Austro-Hungarian Empire collapsed after the First World War. In 1929, he was one of the founders of the Oriental Institute at the Academy of Science in Prague, which was set up to foster commercial and cultural links between Czechoslovakia and the Middle East, and whose Czech equivalent still exists to this day. Musil also lectured in Oriental Studies at Charles University from 1920 until the German occupation of Czechoslovakia in 1938. He died in 1944. Given the fact that Alois Musil did not begin publishing in English until the 1920s, it's not surprising that his huge body of work is not as well known in the English-speaking world as that of his great rival T.E. Lawrence. Nevertheless, according to Professor Lubos Kopacek, he still left behind a lot of things that every Arab scholar can be grateful for.
In the Encyclopedia of Islam, which is the main tool for all those who try to study the problems of the world of Islam, there are several times mentions about some facts discovered by Musil. In the political field, also the border line between the Egyptian Sinai and Palestine was also, after the First World War, marked according to Musil's texts, because he also traveled quite a lot in the Sinai, in that area.
Besides improving our knowledge of the Arab world and of Islam, Professor Kopacek says that the example Alois Musil set in devoting his life to building bridges of understanding between the Occident and the Orient is perhaps his greatest legacy, especially in the context of today's fraught relationship between the two traditions.
His sincere, multifaceted efforts for building good relations among Europeans on the one side and the Arabs or Muslim countries in general on the other side also deserve to be mentioned, because they were pioneering steps in the direction of what is even, perhaps even more important nowadays, to work for the good relations based on better human understanding on both parts.
Czechs in History brings us to the end of this program. I'm Jan Wellinger. All the best from the Czech capital.